Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Everybody, happy back to school day. Yes, and welcome to the News Agenda with me, Fleet Street Fox. And today I'm joined by the Mirror's deputy online political editor, Lizzie Bakken. Morning, Lizzie.
Morning.
This is the People's Pay-Per-View, so get into the comments, ask us your questions. We'll do our best to answer them for you. Those of you listening later on podcast, we just have to launch a few missiles and see if any of them land. So what have we got for you today? Well, the Mirror has splashed on the events overnight in the Middle East, where Iran launched 300 drones and missiles at Israel, 99% of which were intercepted, some of them by RAF jets, which were scrambled to the area on Rishi Sunak's orders. Now, Lizzie, this is going to dominate the agenda today. The Prime Minister is expected to make a statement to the Commons later this afternoon, I think. Without going through millennia of war in this area, what exactly has happened here over the weekend?
Yeah, so obviously there's a long backstory here, but essentially Iran launched an aerial attack on Israel in the sort of late Saturday, early hours of Sunday morning. There was more than sort of 300 missiles, drones sent towards Israel, which has a famous missile defense system called the Iron Dome. So they sort of pride themselves on being able to repel assaults from this sort of assault. 99% of the sort of missiles and drones were shot down. I believe there was some shrapnel got through and a child was injured, but the majority of the Iranian attack was thwarted by not only Israel, but also the US and the UK. So the Prime Minister yesterday did a short clip from Downing Street where he confirmed that RAF jets had been involved and had shot down a number of drones. So it was obviously quite a dramatic situation. I think the Prime Minister was briefed first on Friday. They had a COBRA meeting. Now all eyes are sort of on Israel on what they're going to do next. I think Israel's war cabinet met yesterday for a number of hours, didn't seem to agree a strategy. And global leaders, the US, the UK, the rest of the G7, all desperately trying to cool the temperature. They're seriously worried that this could sort of spiral into something that totally cannot be controlled in the Middle East, which obviously would affect the whole world.
So what do you think, everybody? Is this something that has caused you some concern? It just seems like it's a long way away and it doesn't, what's the problem? There's always been rows and rockets firing around in this part of the world. A lot of people, you could be forgiven for thinking that, I suppose. That's kind of the way the news has gone. But, Iran signalled it was going to do this for quite some time, didn't it? So Israel had time to be prepared. Its allies had time to be prepared. And Iran's been at war with Israel pretty much since the Iranian Revolution of 1979, when the pro-Western Shah was overthrown, the mullahs took over. It's not the first time these two have faced off. Morning, Susan. So what's different now? What's the different aspect to all this? Because this, I think, is one of the first times they've been so obviously Iran v. Israel as opposed to using their proxies, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So quite a lot of the time, the fighting is sort of shadow war almost. So Iran's got proxies in, Lebanon, in Syria, there's Hezbollah in Lebanon. They've also supported the Houthis in Yemen. So quite often what you see is there are these sort of strikes between Iran's proxy groups and Israel. But this is the first time, I think, since the in decades, certainly, that Iran has launched an attack itself onto Israeli soil. And I think that is quite significant. And then also, obviously, the wider context of the war in the war against Hamas. Mm. So Western nations, the US, the UK, all obviously very involved in kind of supporting Israel against Hamas, but also have become in sort of recent months like increasingly concerned about the sort of death toll amongst civilians, whether Israel has gone too far, whether it is behaving in, you know, whether it's committing acts that are beyond sort of international law in Gaza. So I think that is an important context here as well, because, you know, some people theorize that what Iran has done is sort of to try and draw Israel, is to sort of try and provoke a war, basically, and to keep the US involved because they've been sort of pulling back a bit.
Exactly. It has kind of pulled the allies back in, hasn't it? So, like you say, after October the 7th, when there was a lot of sympathy for Israel and the horrific massacres that happened there, there's then been this war in Gaza, which has been brutal. And it has been something which Israel's big allies in the West have repeatedly said, okay, you need to calm it down now. You've done some stuff, but now you've had your retaliation, but you need to just step back, just calm it down. You need an exit strategy, you need your way out. Sherilyn's saying here, it's a matter of time. Why can't us English keep out of other people's business? Palestine and Israel is very much our business, I'm afraid, Sherilyn, going back to the Crusades, kind of our fault in lots of ways. But she does say as well that people are going to be fighting over there. It's just a matter of time. But so we've had this sort of situation where the allies have said, please just calm down. Please stop having such a brutal prosecution of your war. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, has pretty much ignored that, I think it's fair to say, and said, well, we're just going to do what we want to do, whatever. And now because Iran's done this, Rishi Sunak and Joe Biden have ordered their troops to go and defend Israel. Pretty much. I mean, Sunak is obviously got some problems at home and will have no harm whatsoever in looking a bit tough and like he's ordering the planes to go off and do something successful. And the question everyone's going to want him to answer this afternoon, if he stands up in the House of Commons, is the parameters of the UK's involvement in this conflict. You know, at what point do we go in? At what point do we pull out? How far are you going to go? Because no one wants to go to war here. It's not our business, kind of, as Sherilyn says. And the Mirror Politics newsletter, which everyone should subscribe to, points out this morning that it's a really sticky wicket when Netanyahu has ignored our requests to calm down. And suddenly we're having to rush in and participate in his war because the alternative is letting Iran, who were run by a bunch of lunatics, just kind of bomb whoever they want. It's politically, it's really difficult, isn't it?
It's a diplomatic nightmare, I think. I mean, there are many reasons why I wouldn't want to be foreign secretary, but I think certainly at the moment, it's really hard for the UK and for, you know, other allies of Israel, who, especially since the bombing of the murder of aid workers in Gaza recently by Israel, so the killing by a drone strike, that has kind of really cause people to cool off and to actually say, you know, Israel's conduct is really unacceptable. The language you saw out of Downing Street, out the Foreign Office around that was really quite strong. But now they equally don't want, they still want to support Israel, but they don't want to be drawn into a battle with Iran, but they don't want Iran to be attacking Israel. It's an extremely complicated situation. And if Israel does retaliate, goodness knows what could happen. You know, the Prime Minister said yesterday that the impact is impossible to overstate on the stability of the region and the wider world. David Cameron was on the radio this morning and he was saying that the UK doesn't support Israel in a retaliatory strike against Iran. But he, when asked whether, you know, what happens if Iran attacks Israel again, he said, well, you know, that's a different question. So I suppose this is where MPs are going to be wanting to try and dig in this afternoon about, you know, what are the limits of our support for Israel and how far could we go? What kind of conversations are being had? Is it likely that Israel will retaliate? And yeah, so it's a fast moving situation, a lot of different players, and it becomes, there's also obviously the wider conflict as well with between Russia and Ukraine. So you had Russia coming out yesterday urging restraint for Israel to show restraint against Iran, despite the fact that that Russia invaded Ukraine. So, you know, there's a lot of players here.
Vladimir Putin urging people to be restrained militarily. Pot, kettle, what colour are you? Paul says, I don't believe Iran wants to escalate the conflict further, but at the same time, they would if Israel retaliates against their drone strike. Last night, or this weekend rather, worked out quite well for Iran, because like you say, they want Israel obliterated, they want America to stay involved in that region, and they want to be able to, you know, square off against the great Satan, and it suits them politically at home as well. They've got their own problems. And so by having this drone strike, they've got America and the UK back alongside with Israel. They haven't slaughtered huge numbers of people, so they don't look too bad, although there was a little seven-year-old Bedouin girl who got hit by shrapnel. And they won't really mind too much that I think that their missiles didn't all get home, because the point of the strike wasn't to cause damage and death. The point was to get America back on side and, you know, change the political calculation a bit in the area. And that's what's happened. Mike says, times like these show how irresponsible it was for Sunak to appoint a foreign secretary who cannot be questioned in the Commons. He's got a point there, hasn't he, Lizzie? David Cameron's just really been questioned on LBC.
Yeah, that's right. I think, you know, MPs have been, the fact that because David Cameron is a peer, he can't, and not an MP, he can't give a statement in the House of Commons, which is a major problem. He obviously faces questions in the House of Lords, which is, you know, is not a small thing. There are a lot of peers who are very experienced, who have a lot of knowledge, but they are not the elected representatives that the public has put into Parliament. And so it is not really adequate. And MPs have been trying for a while to try and come up with some sort of solution. Interestingly, on Friday, Number 10, a minister stepped down. So Number 10 did a tiny reshuffle, and they've named Andrew Mitchell as the Deputy Foreign Secretary, which is very unusual. So he is obviously going to deputise for Cameron in the Commons. But I suspect today it will be the Prime Minister. Because considering the severity of it, Rishi Sunak will probably want to do this statement himself. There are definitely broader questions about David Cameron's accountability in Parliament, particularly because, you know, the world, there are always global issues, but it certainly feels at the moment like there is a lot of very high stakes stuff going on.
And Rishi Sunak's not a political genius, is he? He hasn't got the strategic brain to think his way sort of around a corkscrew. So it's what you need in this situation. So it's all going to be a bit sticky. We'll have to sort of see how it pans out. Susan says she's worried about when it's going to appear at our door. It will do. And despite what Sherilyn says, what happens globally does affect us here in the UK. Jay Sutcliffe says it's not our fault. Historical events probably hark back to the Crusades, not our business when they've had 1,000 years to get to grips with this farce. But Palestinian situation is pretty much, that was us, speaks Lawrence of Arabia within living memory. Sherilyn says, sooner Richie's gone, the better. Richie?
I mean, maybe she, you know,
Rishi, well. Sooner Rishi's gone, the better. Sorry, yeah. Sherilyn. Sorry, I was thinking Lionel. This is a Monday morning. It's been difficult. Now, we need to move on to the main story of the day. And today, the ex-president, Donald Trump, is going to become the first to hold that office who is arraigned on criminal charges. Now, many of the lawsuits he has faced so far have been civil tax proceedings. This one, Lizzie, is the biggest, isn't it? What exactly is he accused of doing this time?
So, yeah, today, big day for Donald Trump among his many court cases. Today, he becomes, I think, the first former US president to stand trial in a criminal case. So this is what our viewers might remember as the hush money trial. So it's basically Trump is accused of, I believe, falsifying his business records to disguise a payment he made to Stormy Daniels, a former adult film star. So this was just before the 2016 election. He's pleaded not guilty to this, but he could face a maximum, I think it's 4 years in prison if he's convicted. So
five. I think it's five. Max.
There is also a chance that he could be fined. There's also a chance that he is found not guilty. But it's a big moment. I think they are doing jury selection today and the trial's going to last several weeks. But it's kind of, it's a big reminder of the fact that Donald Trump is obviously sort of, you know, he's got the nomination, he's looking forward to the presidential election, but he's got so much baggage, and all of these different cases he's facing it just makes the picture extremely complicated.
Yeah, and this is 34 charges of falsifying his business records that he's facing in this one particular trial. Not just once, 34 different ways he's managed to fudge the accounts to some extent. Now, like you said, this is the first time that a president's been up on criminal charges, a US president. There's nothing in the US Constitution that says that's a big problem as far as standing for presidents goes. And he's got the nomination to run for president in November. So how is this going to work then, Lizzie? I mean, what can we expect to see really as the case rolls out? Because Melania, his wife, has not appeared. Monster, says Andy Robertson. I don't think you're talking about Melania. I think that's Donald. Melania, his wife, has not been at any of his previous trials offering moral support. Is she going to be at this one?
Yes, I believe so. Which is obviously, you know, she's such an interesting character because she's always sort of she's been at his side sort of for quite a lot of the time, but she never says anything. She's always totally inscrutable. So yeah, totally fascinating. I think that the cast of characters that are going to be around in general, I mean, Stormy Daniels is a really interesting person anyway. And, you know, so obviously you'll hear from her. There's, I think as well, there's going to be, you know,
there's Karen McDougall as well, isn't there, who's someone else who is alleged to have had an affair with the president, and like Stormy Daniels, was paid off in the race in 2016. So both these women have claimed to have had Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougall have claimed to have consensual relationships with Donald Trump, which is a rarity in his back catalogue. But that basically in the run-up to the 2016 election, when he first ran for president, that they got paid big sums of money to go away and be quiet. Stormy Daniels even said that she was threatened once or twice by people that she believed were linked to Trump. And her child was threatened as well. And so both these women are going to be giving evidence at the trial at some point, which is going to be an absolute carnival, isn't it? Mm. And even the jury selection is going to be a bit problematic, because one of the questions the potential jurors are being asked is, have you ever been a member of the Proud Boys? Were you there at the Capitol riots? Are you a member of Antifa? You know, are you really pro or really anti-Trump? If so, there's the door. And the chances are that you're going to find some jurors somewhere along the line who've sent a tweet or, you know, put something on social media, which perhaps isn't necessarily conducive to a balanced case. Mike says Trump could always sell more Trump cards to finance any fine. Though with Stormy Daniels involved, they may be a bit more interesting than the last lot. Now, this is the question. What do you think, everybody, as well? How do you think this is going to play out? How do you think this is going to work? And is Donald Trump going to exploit this successfully to his own ends? Because previous cases, Lizzie, we've seen him grandstanding. We've seen him being ticked off by the judge, giving impromptu press conferences on courthouse steps, saying it's all been a setup by Joe Biden, you know, on lots of different things that have been he's been accused of, making money and airtime out of it, basically selling cards, selling hats, selling Bibles. Richard says Donald Trump and a second series of reality politics could become the evidence that the sequel is always worse, apart from Star Trek. That's the one thing that rejects that suggestion. But yes, it is not going to necessarily be great. It's perhaps not going to work out quite the same way this time, though, maybe, Lizzie, because it's not a federal case. It's been brought by the state. He's facing jail time rather than a fine. And let's face it, everyone already knows that he did do this. And also, it was well before Joe Biden was even really in the running. You know, he was paying off Stormy Daniels when he was facing Hillary Clinton, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, obviously important to say that he has pleaded not guilty to these charges, but but yes,
you're
right. He definitely
slept with them, though, and he hasn't denied that.
Well, I think he has denied being unfaithful to his, whether we believe him or not. I think he has said that he wasn't.
Karen McDougall, to some extent.
Yeah, that he wasn't involved.
I don't think he's ever really been drawn on that. Of course, we're going to hear that. But he's not on trial for having sex with someone.
No, quite. You know, that's not a criminal offence. So, yeah, you're totally right, though, that this is a very different scenario to some of the others. Obviously, a lot of the... he's managed to sort of find a way, or at least is attempting to use all of this legal action as a kind of campaigning tool, as a way of like getting his message across when all eyes are on him, when he's got lots of media coverage, and to kind of continue pushing that narrative that like he's a sort of outsider in some ways, which he is not, obviously, that the political class, the legal system are all trying to stamp out his message. You know, he's telling the truth and they just can't handle it, so that the courts are going to try and silence him, that sort of thing, which is obviously nonsense. But, you know, that works very well for his campaign strategy and to sort of the voters that he's trying to speak to. But this stuff happened pre-2016. So... it is quite difficult for him to say it's Joe Biden's fault, or that this is being done to was done to undermine him, because obviously it came out when he was president, but all of these events happened before, certainly.
I mean, you couldn't even blame Hillary for this one. It's not like, you know, she made him pay off somebody, if that was what happened. Scott on Twitter says, all going well, he could soon be the first ex-president in the cells. That's possible. But, you know, is there a chance he could get off here, I suppose, Lizzie? This isn't whether he had an affair with either of these two women, but whether they're paid off. It's about, and it's not even about whether they're paid off, to be fair. It's about whether his company accounts were fudged to hide the fact they were paid off. It was whether there was a cover-up of the payoff. I mean, surely Trump could say at some point, you know, well, Your Honour, I told my lawyer to make it go away. I didn't know he was doing this to make it go away. No. Could he yet walk, and could he yet stand for election to the White House this November, even if he's convicted?
I don't think there's anything that's to stop him necessarily. I mean, there's nothing in the Constitution that prevents him from doing so. Though obviously, if he was in a jail cell, I think they'd have to. I don't know what they would
I think. Doing. I think the 24-hour coverage would have to stop. Yeah. He wouldn't be able to take part in any presidential debates.
I don't think that would be possible. But yeah, for now, you know, they're continuing as normal. I mean, obviously, I assume that the Republicans could withdraw the nomination if they wanted to, though whether they want to or not is another matter. I think they have their national convention in the summer. You know, I'm sure that in an emergency situation they could take it back if they wanted to, but he could always, you know, but it everybody knows that this is all on the table. It's not surprising. It's not like you know, he's running, it's not like Joe Biden's running to be president and then suddenly some scandal out of nowhere comes out and he ends up in court. You know, this is all very much factored in a way. So he clearly thinks that he can fight this, and his supporters think he can fight it, so that's what they'll try and do. But I mean, it's going to be a bit of a white knuckle ride, isn't it?
It is. It's astonishing. But the thing as well that, you know, you could end up having a presidential debate where one party's in an orange jumpsuit and chained to the podium, or perhaps doing it from his cell on a payphone and getting the beeps and going to feed the quarters in as he's going. Kind of a bit mad, but like you say, I mean, everyone who selected him to be the candidate, the nominee, knew this was coming. I suppose the thing will be if, you know, if there is a conviction or at some point during the course of the case, if the polls for Trump, which currently show him kind of neck and neck with Biden, edging ahead in some places, if the polls really fall off a cliff and the Republicans look like they're going to be trounced, that's the only way really that I think when it goes to the convention in July, they might put someone else back out on the floor and say, we've got to switch him out. But that's very unlikely to happen because he's got such a powerful base in some way. So yeah, we could see him. Could we see him back in the White House? Paul says Trump won't be jailed. He's going to be president, as polls show. All right, Paul. I think if he's convicted, his chance of being president actually probably really going to take a dive, because then Joe Biden just looks as senile as you may think. Some people do think Joe Biden is, or even not a very good president. which would be the main reason to make him commander in chief. Because, you know, if you're a member of the American forces, you're going to take the orders of a convicted felon. I think so. If you are Secretary of State for war, or Secretary of State in the US, are you going to follow this man's instructions? Who's going to be actually running the country? If this guy's in a prison cell, he's not going to be in the White House. He's not going to be in the Oval Office taking instructions or issuing instructions to anybody. He's going to be in solitary, in Supermax. You know, he's a bit stuffed, really, in terms of running a country effectively. So it's his vice president that's going to be doing all this. Do we actually, I mean, Lynn says if he goes to jail and becomes president, all he'll do is pardon himself. Can't do it on this one, Lynn. These are New York charges, right? So the state charges. He can only pardon himself for federal crimes. These are state crimes. He goes to jail if he's convicted. And that is that. He can't pardon himself for this one. But do we know, Lizzie, who might be his running mate? Because it's that VP, if he's convicted, which is going to be, quickly Google it, which is going to be the actual person who's doing the effective day-to-day running if he were to win the election. And I think he hasn't offered. Normally during the race to be the nominee, you buy off one of your opponents and say, come and be my VP, wouldn't you? And he didn't do that, I think, during this race. He didn't offer it to Nikki Haley. He didn't offer it to Ron DeSantis. Some of them pulled out, obviously hoping they would be a running mate, but it hasn't happened. So he hasn't nominated who his number two is going to be.
Yeah, and I think that Nikki Haley didn't seem to want that as well. You know, she wanted to stay in, and she wanted to, I suppose for her as well, there's always a chance that you set yourself up as the kind of backup candidate, if you see what I mean. So that obviously if this all falls apart, that there is somebody that the Republican sort of grandees look around and say, oh God, you know, like this is really going south, like we're going to have to get somebody else in. That would be a good space that you'd want to be in. But I can see for a lot of people, you know, Trump's such a difficult character. He burned through so many people when he was in office last time. I don't know whether there are many, you know, whether there are many people who would really want that job. I'm not sure who he's thinking of. I know there's certainly, like, they're certainly having conversations, but I think that the pool of people that you can choose from is probably quite small now.
Yeah, exactly. I think Mike Pence's VP before obviously was someone who was right at the heart of the insurrections on January the 6th and who Trump blamed. And to some extent, the guys who took over the Capitol, who stormed the Capitol, were looking for Pence. They wanted to lynch the man. Lynn says he might get immunity. Don't think you do from state crimes. I think it's the same situation. And the lotion on his skin said something that I've just forgotten, but I'm not going to remember the name. He said Stormy Daniels for VP. Thank you very much, Will. So we'll just have to see, won't we, how this all plays out. But it's going to be entertaining, I should have thought. Matt says it's important to remember this trial isn't about hush money payments or Trump having an affair. It's about whether he falsified his company accounts. A bit like how they got Al Capone. In the end, it's always the cover-up. It's always the tax man. He's more relentless than the wheels of justice. Right. Thank you for that, Lizzie. We do need to move on. We found some good news in the world for you. Here it is. Now, when a young lad called John Avery was publicly accused of being a coward for not going away to fight in the Second World War, he was absolutely devastated. In fact, he was a Bevan boy, ordered to stay at home and dig coal, thereby keeping Britain's lights on at the request of the government minister of the day, Ernest Bevin, who came up with the idea. He was only a teenager at the time. Now, a 97-year-old great-grandfather, he was unaware he was eligible for the Defence Medal for helping keep Britain going during the Second World War, and his family, though, have organised one for him, and he was presented with it by the local MP. His daughter said it made up for a lot of the pain he had suffered, and the photographs there, you can see he's A, highly delighted, but B, when he got the medal, he was in tears. It meant an awful lot to him. Lizzie, is this proof that it's often the people who plug away quietly below, not those who make a lot of noise and fire and kerfuffle above, you know, the ones who deserve our attention?
Yeah, I think this is really moving. I actually, like, looking at those photos makes me feel like I want to cry a little bit. I think, you know, there are so many people obviously we want to reward people for great acts of service, but there are so many people who are quietly kind of getting on with stuff that actually is making a huge difference and no one really knows about it. I always think this when you do, when we cover the honours lists, like the New Year's honours, the King's Birthday honours, and there's always, we write stories about, you know, the celebs, and there's always like some dodgy political nominee or something like that. But then there'll always be some person who's been, you know, volunteering in a charity shop for 80 years or something like that. And you just think this is doing something in their community that really makes a difference to people. And obviously also these are the people that the medals and the honours mean a great deal to. And I think it's really nice that, you know, this John Avery obviously had quite a tough time and was made to feel like he hadn't been brave enough, that he hadn't done the right thing while still sort of serving his country in a different way. So I think it's really nice that he's been recognised.
Yeah, I think, as I imagine at the time, that the people who are running the country were doing an awful lot of praise for the young lads who were signing up, and then the conscripts who were forced to go away to war and making a big fuss about their bravery and making less of a fuss, therefore, by comparison, about those who had to stay at home and do work like this. My grandfather was much older than John was at the time, but he was in a reserved occupation. So he was an engineer, and he was back sort of making armaments and bullets and stuff like that in a foundry. And, you know, he was in his, I think, 40s, 50s at the time. And, you know, we wasn't perhaps expected to fight quite so much, but it was just as important as the people who did go. My other granddad, who did go over at D-Day, you know, they both did their different ends of things. And people like John deserve all the credit they get. It's just such a shame he's had to wait until he's 97 to get the blimmin' medal. The government is terrible about medals. They should hand them out a bit more flipping often. They tend to hand them out to themselves fairly often. You'll get gongs and honours. They don't give it to the hoi polloi very much. Anyway, well done, John. Thank you, Lizzie, for taking us through all that. Best of luck, Donald, with what's going to be coming through your life in the next few weeks. We're going to enjoy it immensely. And I suppose you're getting lots of free airtime. So we'll see how it all pans out in the next few weeks and months. And fingers crossed for everyone in the Middle East that things don't get any worse there either. Right, we'll see you all again on Wednesday, everybody, for another edition of the News Agenda. Till then, take care. Stay safe. See you on the other side. Tati bye.